This is The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Epigenetics. This is the scientific basis for what we're going to be talking about this hour, how and when your genes are expressed, are controlled by epigenetics, and your epigenome is influenced by your experiences and the experiences of your ancestors. So, if you have problems that you can't explain, of anxiety, obsessive thoughts, panic attacks, depression, other things, could be related. That's something that happened to one of your grandparents many, many, many years ago could be impacting you today. And that is the foundation of the book. It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. And we're joined by the book's author, Mike Wolin. Mark, hi, Mark. Welcome to The Source.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
You can call in and join our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. And Mark, before we get into the science, and I think going over the science is real important, but I do want to hear your story. How did you first start thinking about this?
A long time ago, 25, 26 years ago, I lost a sight in one of my eyes. And the doctors told me they couldn't cure it. It was called central serous retinopathy. And they told me to expect, the way mine was going, that I'd lose sight in the other eye as well. I was petrified. I was losing a lot of sight a day. There was the 5% people that had the chronic form that I had could go legally blind. So I tried everything. I tried juice fasts and supplements. I mean, there was nothing that made, in fact, everything made my sight get worse. So I went on a journey for healing, and that journey literally took me around the globe to study with some pretty profound teachers who taught me some fundamental principles, one of which was to go home and heal my relationship with my parents, which back then was impossible. The relationship had been broken. I didn't know why at the time, but inherited family trauma had stood in between. Let me get into that. Here I am trying to heal this relationship with my parents, and I managed to do so, and my vision comes back. But before I could heal it, this anxiety, this feeling of being broken from a mother's love, was what had been passed down in my family for generations. In fact, all of my grandparents were orphaned in some way. Three of them lost their mothers when they were babies, and one lost her father at one, and ultimately her mother's care also, her mother's attention. So healing this, healing the anxiety, the feeling that I was going to be left, healing the resentments brought my eyesight back. And then I wanted to share these principles that I'd learned, and that's what, I didn't know it, but 26 years ago a book was in the works.
So when you tell us that your eyesight was brought back, your eyes were healed, so basically, your eye problem was a form of hysteria. There was a psychological basis for it.
I didn't know it at the time, but I would say it was constant stress and constant anxiety that, you know, can come out somewhere in our body. Sometimes it's just emotional or psychological or some mental stress. Sometimes it affects our body. For me, the effect was stress-related, and that, in fact, that's the only thing the doctors could tell me, that they'd seen this condition before and that they saw it connected to great stress. I mean, I remember even as a child when my mom would leave the house, I'd be 5 or 6 years old, I'd run into her bedroom and I'd pull open her drawers and pull out her clothes and smell her smell, thinking I was never going to see her again, which is what happened in my family. No one ever saw their mother again. And I would cry into her clothes, thinking all I had left was her scent. And 40 years later, I remember saying to her, you know, Mom, when I was a little boy, I would cry into your clothes when you would leave. And this is the strange thing. She looked right at me and she said, "You did that too? I did the same thing when my mom left the house." Then I knew it was a family pattern.
So here you have this experience, and you start to, what, do more research? How do you get further into this area?
Well, I start teaching these principles. I teach these principles that I learned from these teachers, one of which is to heal your relationship with your parents, one of which is to make sure that you have a good relationship with your child's other parent. I remember some of the early cases that I had that just didn't make sense when I'd work with people. One in particular, I worked with this woman who, she was a cutter, and she would cut so deeply into her skin that she'd often have to be hospitalized for infections or mass amounts of blood. And she'd been on medications and been through psychiatry and the whole thing, and nothing ever touched the cutting until we asked this question. I said to her, "What do you think about as you're going to cut?" And she said, I don't deserve to live. And I'm looking at a 24-year-old girl, think a woman, young, just her life's just starting, and I'm thinking, what did you do? What did you do that you don't deserve to live? Did you hurt somebody? And she said, "No, it's nothing like that." And then I asked about her family history, and then she told the detail that sort of opened the window. She said, "My grandmother was driving drunk. She was an alcoholic. And my grandfather was in the passenger seat, and she crashed the car into a pole, and my grandfather went flying through the glass, and he got cut, lacerated, deep wounds, bled to death, died, and she hated her life after that and felt she deserved to die." Now, when you put that all together, here's this woman cutting, bleeding, lacerating, and at the same time feeling like she deserves to die. We worked with the story. We worked in a very profound way, and she never cut again. I was making connections like these that didn't make sense. So that sort of opened up a way of seeing, and I've always been interested in this. What is it that makes us suffer, but it's out of context with what we know? What is it about our anxieties that are sudden onset, that come as soon as we get married or have a child? Or what is it as soon when we have this obsessive thought and we don't know what it's connected to? That's my interest, of looking at the unexplained mysteries. And now we're realizing it's not such a mystery because of the science.
And we're going to talk about the science more. We're going to take a quick break. Our phone lines are open. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 210-614-8980. Science is finding out that there are markers that are put on our genes, epigenetics, and how this influences our behavior, our psychology, generation after generation. What does that mean? How can it be treated? Therapy. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. It Didn't Start With You. That's the title of the book that we're talking about this hour on The Source, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. The author of the book is Mark Wolin, and he is also the director of the Family Constellation Institute in San Francisco, and he has taught all over about this type of, I guess this is a fledgling, or is this a new way of dealing with this type of trauma, Mark?
It is. Well, for me, for 20-some years, I've been working with this type of trauma, but now the science is finally catching up, and we're now looking at this idea called biological trauma or secondary PTSD, where we inherit. In the past, not a lot of therapy has gone in this direction, and now that it's a brand-new field, people are interested in knowing, well, what can I do about it? How can I end this cycle, which is the reason I wrote the book, really. So people had somewhere to turn. They had a way to break the cycle. I also wanted to generate awareness in the medical community, therapeutic community, about the impact of epigenetics. What we're learning right now is astounding.
So let's talk about that a little bit more so people can understand. I mean, this kind of sounds a little Shirley MacLaine-y past life type hokum, and this is not that. Okay, so we have experiments with lab rats, and it's published by peer-reviewed journals looking at what? Talk about some of these experiments.
Okay. Scientists they've long suspected that something like this has been going on. I mean, for 100 years, we've known that when our grandmother was 5 months pregnant with our mother, the egg that would be us is in the womb. We already know that we've shared a biological environment for three generations. But now, 10 years ago, actually, this rock star neuroscientist named Rachel Yehuda, and she's the one who's done the work with humans. She, and then I'll talk about the studies with mice and rats. 10 years ago, she discovers that the children of Holocaust survivors have the same trauma symptoms of their parents, specifically the low cortisol levels, the stress hormone. And then she finds that not only do Holocaust children have the same trauma symptoms, but now the children of the World Trade Center attacks, when the mothers who were at or near the World Trade Center and they were pregnant and they had gone on to develop PTSD, the kids came out with PTSD and 16 different genetic markers. And then war veterans have this pattern. She just found out last year, this was probably the most famous of the studies, in my opinion. She's able to detect in the traumatized survivors and their children, they share the exact same genetic pattern in the exact same part of the same gene. I think it's the FKB5 gene. I forget exactly the name. She tells us that you and I are three times more likely to have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, if one of our parents have PTSD. And then, as a result, we're likely to suffer with anxiety and depression. Now, she's the one that's done the studies with humans, and we can look and say two generations for sure. But in mice studies, and the reason we study mice in the first place and rats is because they share 99% of the same genetic makeup as humans. So out of the 30,000 genes, 29,700 are the same. What we find is we can see this pattern for three generations. If we have time to talk about it, I'd love to talk about my favorite mouse study.
Just go for it. Go ahead.
Okay. So the one I find absolutely the most intriguing, because what it does is it tells us that it's only for three generations, and the trauma is experienced once, and the symptoms go for the next two or three. Let me show you what happens. Mice, male mice, they're put into a little box, and then a scent of cherry blossom smell is introduced, as is an electric shock. So the mice smells the smell, gets a shock. Then they test the mouse's brain, and they see that the brain has enlarged receptors that can pick up that scent at detect it at lower amounts. But they also see changes in the sperm. Now, in the next generation, those mice, all they do is introduce the smell, and the mice are jumpy and jittery and anxious without ever getting the shock. And they, too, have the enlarged brain, and they, too, have the changes in the blood and in the sperm. Now, the strangest thing is in the third generation. Those mice, they introduce the smell, they get jumpy, without ever having the trauma, without ever being shocked as well, but they don't have the physical changes, which leads the researchers, specifically a man named Brian Diaz, who headed the team, to say that something in the sperm is informing these mice. It's an epigenetic transmission of some sort, but he's also saying we can see it for three generations, but maybe not beyond that. That's compelling.
And we see how in humans, traumatic event impacting one generation. We see with Holocaust victims. There's also been research that shows that it's happened with Native American peoples as well. And I would imagine that this would probably be exactly the same with descendants of slavery.
We're seeing it all over, yes. We're seeing it with the children of the Rwandan genocide. We're seeing it in the depressed Cambodian children from the Cambodian genocide. There are some people that are connecting the high suicide rate in the Native American communities with the epigenetic transmission of these defeats, these terrible traumas. We're seeing, and look what's happening in our world now. We're constantly building on the negative. Traumas continue, and we are likely to see in the next generation these traumatic repetitions. You know, 100 years ago, Freud coined the term traumatic repetition, this idea that we repeat so we can get it right. Maybe that's what's happening at some level. Maybe these, who knows? There's so many things we don't understand. But what we do see, and what I see all the time, are the traumas of the parents, especially when they don't talk about them, especially when they're hidden, especially when our relationship with our parents is poor. Somehow, that seems to generate even a greater continuance of these traumas.
Sure, there's a conspiracy of silence in all families. Every family has secrets. And if you don't know what the secrets are in your family, you're the one they're keeping the secrets from. So let's go to the phone lines. Number is 210-614-8980, and Hugh is on the line. Hugh, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is part of a much larger thing that's going on, a revolution, controversial revolution, in biology, especially in genetics, and especially in evolution, where it's called the new synthesis. There's a reporter by the name of Susan Mazur, M-A-Z-U-R, that is doing interviews and following this, and those interviews will make your hair hurt. But there's a study he didn't mention, which is the study of the Dutch children who were starved during World War II, and that led to three generations of metabolic syndrome, of cholesterol problems, and other metabolic problems that can be traced back to that thing.
Hugh, thanks for
Absolutely.
The call. Appreciate it. Mark, your reaction?
Yeah, I've seen that study. Thank you. Thank you for saying it here on the air.
And so do you know about this new synthesis that Hugh mentions?
I've not heard the word, no, but I absolutely, everything this gentleman Hugh said is spot on.
Right, and he's talking about a village in Sweden, Norrbotten, that's been studied. It was very isolated and where starvation occurred, and they're looking at the long-term impacts, multi-generational impact. And let's go to another caller. Gonzalo is on the line. Gonzalo, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, hello. I love your show, and I listen to it often.
Well, thanks.
Got to be quick. I'm picking up my son at school. But I kind of wanted to warn you about some things. I haven't read this gentleman's book, but the word epigenetics seems to be what's getting thrown around. And I don't see any ties. He's made no firm ties to epigenetics. And furthermore, this is kind of a pattern with people who are just trying to sell things based on research that's not tied to human studies or any effectiveness in their techniques. For instance, the neuroplasticity was taken advantage of by an online company recently that got sued. And Deepak Chopra talks about quantum physics, and it's just not tied to their pop psych self-help stuff. And just because rats got starved at some point, I haven't read the studies, does not mean that his techniques work. And he's admitted that he's been doing these techniques before he ever heard about the epigenetics. So he's not basing it on any kind of scientific research. And I would warn the listeners, and I would warn you, because I like to show Mr. Davies that
sure.
Just because someone says epigenetics, it doesn't mean that it's tied, you know?
Got it.
It's marketing.
Yes, sir, and I appreciate your skepticism, and that's a healthy dose to be sure. And I thank you for calling in with that. So, Mark, Gonzalo is expressing some skepticism. What do you think?
I think I was a pretty big skeptic myself, but I kept following a trail of peculiar sentences and peculiar symptoms, and this is what led me into it. I never expected to write a book on epigenetics. I didn't even know that's where I was going, actually. I was going in the direction of symptoms we couldn't explain that seemed to repeat, which led me into the study, a deep study, which I include in my book, 40-some pages on all the studies out there that I could find that are relevant on epigenetics. And what it's taught me is that these traumas are biologically based, and I appreciate the skepticism as well. I've been there. I'm no longer a skeptic.
Sure. So the epigenetics is a real thing. It means literally above genetics, and it's considered to be thought of as the software that will run your genome. The genome is the hardware. So how your genes are expressed, when they are expressed, how long, that controls what kind of proteins are going to be, you know, what you are. And so you can have people who are biologically identical, like a clone or identical twins, and eventually they will have drift in their epigenetic in relating to their experiences. And it can be things as simple as smoking or drinking or even a traumatic event that can change how or even their psychological state on how their genome is expressed. Is that right, Mark?
That's exactly right. I like your analogy about the software and the hardware. It seems like we're born with an operating system into that hard drive that we
sure.
have. And that operating system seems to contain the fallout.
Right. And so that's why we're trying to lay down the foundation of the science. We're going to talk more about this. We got to take an NPR news break, local news break here on The Source. We'll be right back after this. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. Can a traumatic event that happened to one of your grandparents be impacting you today, causing you anxiety, maybe addiction, phobias, panic disorders? Even if you never met your grandparents, there is a link there, a link that passes through generations and that brings you the possibility of being impacted by trauma that they felt to you today. And the latest research calls it epigenetics. It's been proven with observations in people and experiments with lab rats. So we're speaking with Mark Wolin. He's author of the book, It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got questions and comments, we'd love to hear from you. 210-614-8980. What scars of family trauma do you carry? How does it express itself in your life today? And we've got a caller, and Safa is on the line. Safa, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Hi.
You're on the air.
How are you?
Okay.
I'd like to ask Mr. Wolin a question. There was a scholar who, her name is Dr. Joy DeGruy, who has written a book called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And I'd love to know what he sees as the connections. What connections would you draw looking at contemporary African Americans? What connections would you draw from, given slavery and its aftermath? How would you see a connection between the physiological and emotional maladies that are seen in African Americans today?
All right,
and I'll take my answer on the air.
Great, great, great question. So,
question.
So, Mark, it's not just slavery. You know, you talk about three generations, but we have the reinfection of Jim Crow and even events that are happening today.
You know, I've seen mass trauma on a group of people having a devastating effect, no matter what group we talk about. I'm sure I've not studied enough about the African-American community to say that I could speak exactly on that, but let me talk about one that I do study often, which is the Holocaust community. So there's this man who would have panic attacks so severe that he couldn't go out of the house. He'd black out whenever he'd go somewhere new. He couldn't go to the next neighborhood. He couldn't go to a restaurant. He couldn't take a vacation. And this idea of, so I'm interested as a clinician, I'm interested in that language that we use that's peculiar. And when he said the word somewhere new, it wasn't until he told me that 74 members of his family were killed in the Holocaust. Literally, they were taken from their homes to somewhere new, a concentration camp, where they were murdered. That this was the only thing that affected his anxiety. He always knew that his family died in the Holocaust, but he'd never made the connection that he was carrying it. And after we did the work, he was no longer a prisoner in his home. He was able to take vacations. Now, we can look at some of the patterns today that we see in the African-American community, and I would love to hear the thoughts of what we think are connected with slavery. What would you say, Dave?
I would have to say there's probably some anti-authoritarianism, maybe.
Yep, keep going. I'd love to hear.
I don't want to speculate. It's hard to speculate. We don't know. This is what science is for, is to do the research and to talk to people and go out there and do the hard work, do the work. But we're raising these issues saying, when people say, just get over it, hey, it didn't happen to you. It happened a long time ago. No, it's not quite that simple.
It's the same. I don't want to speculate. This is the other reason I've written the book, to generate awareness in the therapeutic community, the research community, to get these studies done so we can have these answers. I can speak of the communities I'm familiar with. I work with a lot of Cambodians. I work with a lot of Holocaust survivors. I work with Native Americans. I've not seen enough of the connections in the African-American community to talk about this with any authority, but I'm fascinated with it, and I'd love to learn more. Perhaps someone will do the studies.
Okay, let's go to more phone calls. The number is 210-614-8980. And Rex, you're on the air. Rex, hi, you're speaking with Mark Wolin.
Well, I would just concur with the previous caller who expressed skepticism about this.
Yes.
Because this is not the biology we're taught in the universities here. That we're used to thinking about, because it did go on in the Soviet Union, the inheritance of acquired characteristic, but it in the rest of the world, it was something that was relegated to the 19th century. So I'm just searching for another way that these types of things might be possible without biological processes.
Okay, Rex, thanks for the call, and we appreciate, the skepticism. That's what makes a healthy conversation. So, this is controversial stuff, Mark.
I'm aware. We're shining a light where the light hasn't been shown before. We've got the studies, we've got the epigenetic research, and now we're here making connections. And they're not always easy for people to hear. No, we don't want to hear that we're carrying the traumas of our parents and our grandparents. It's uncomfortable. But it seems to be what the research is pointing to. And I see case after case where it is the case. And how do I know that? Is that the people heal once these traumas are brought to light. And once we work through them, the behavior stops. The symptoms ease, the feelings ease, and that's the part as a practitioner that I'm most interested in.
Well, we have the epigenetics material that we're talking about, how this is being, these markers are being attached to the DNA and passed from generation to generation, but also we have just the family narrative that's passed, along. So now I think about how we make spaghetti in my house. I make the spaghetti. I'm making it just like my mom made it, and she made the spaghetti the way her mom made it. And, there's that strand of spaghetti that's connecting all of us. Many of the things that we do in our lives, how we treat each other, how we deal with stress, how we express our frustration, is a learned behavior.
Some of it's learned, absolutely. But then there are these things that strike suddenly or that come out of the blue, and these peculiar ways in which we hit a certain age, and maybe age 30 when our parents, when our father left our mother or our mother died, and all of a sudden we find we're 30 and we start to pull away from our partner, or we see we reach a certain milestone in our life. As soon as we get married or we go to have a new baby or we move to a new place or we get rejected by a partner. I once worked with a woman. She was consumed with anxiety as soon as she became a new mother, Dave. She, when we worked with the exact feeling behind this anxiety, she said, and she didn't have anxiety before she became a new mother. She was fine.
Sure.
We talked about what sits behind this anxiety, and she said,
"We're going to take a break, Mark. We're going to take a break. We'll talk more about that when we come back." And our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. A lot of calls. We'll get to them right after this one minute break. It didn't start with you. How inherited family trauma shapes who we are, and how to end the cycle. The Source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It Didn't Start With You. It's the title of the book. Mark Wolin is the author. And let's get back to some callers. Claiborne is on the line. Claiborne, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I was wondering about nature versus nurture, especially in communal and group settings, to wit, all of the people who came out of slavery in the sharecropping, then made the great northern migration and got treated that way, or the Tejanos and the Texicans who were picking on farms here in South Texas kind of thing and stuff. Because I've seen instances of people whose recent family life has nothing to do with that, but then they end up in an environment where they're surrounded by that. And I know, like, I'm 50. I've come to realize at my age how much of my life has been, especially when I was young, was affected by other people's neuroses and psychoses and their fears and so forth and so on. As an example, my grandmother got food poisoning once, and ever since then, for the last 30 years till she died, if you left your food out to cool off, she'd stick it in the fridge or throw it out. Or, like, her fear of, like, poison ivy, same kind of thing. Luckily, I'm an INTP, so it didn't get that instilled in me. But, again, in my late 40s, I started to realize how much of my life was affected by other people's stuff.
Right. And, Claiborne, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. So, Mark, Claiborne makes some great points.
Absolutely. There's the nature versus nurture, and epigenetics is only one element of the soup. But that to say that that's all that it makes up a human being, just epigenetics, would be an oversimplification. Certainly, there's learned behavior. Certainly, we learn from a story like Claiborne's, where the grandmother on the food poisoning. So, absolutely. However, the fact that we now have the science to back up these repetitions, that's what I'm interested in.
So the idea is that people will be predisposed to certain type forms of anxiety, and maybe this type of behavior, your treatment, talking to people, getting them to write about their relationships and their memories of their parents and grandparents, to help them release that or crystallize what it is that is actually bothering them, get them to bring it out of the subconscious and bring it into the conscious.
The method I've developed looks at the emotionally charged words that we use to describe our fears, our symptoms. They're like breadcrumbs. If we follow this trail, it'll lead us back to, there are traumas in our childhood for sure, but they'll also lead us back to traumas in the family history, traumas that have been ignored, traumas that have never healed, traumas that no one will talk about. See, there's this idea in families that the more we stay quiet about what happened in a family, the more we immunize the next generation. It's actually quite the opposite. We need to talk about these things. So the method I use in the book is I guide the reader to talk about the traumas in the family and the specific language you learn to be a detective, and to pull out this language and see where it connects when you do your genogram, which is a part of the book where I have people talk about the trauma and this generation that they know about and the trauma and the generation before. So we're walking around with our with a feeling of abandonment, but we never think to link it that our grandmother was left by her mom when she was two, and that this is an imprint that we're born with, perhaps, and then it becomes a blueprint that we live out and can pass on forward to our children until we take the steps to heal it.
Another caller with Dennis. Dennis, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Sir, I wanted to use two disparate phrases that came to mind as I was taking voluminous notes. This is very interesting, and I'm very convinced. The first is phylogeny repeats ontology to be scientific, and the other, since I'm spiritual, is the sins of the fathers or the mothers will be visited on the sons and the daughters. Now, those are two very different ways of saying the same thing, I think. And I'm also going to be critical of the computer analysis. I've been tired of it for a long time. I've never owned a computer, but they are not organic. They have no freedom. They can't even make analogies. But I do agree with the hardwired. I've seen it in my life with people I know. But when computers crash any time because of electricity, when people crash, it's a lot more real.
All right,
and
Jim.
I believe this. And I am a Caucasian, embarrassed about it. Because I'm German heritage, and I'm astonished what the Germans could do to another human being.
All right, Dennis, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. So that's something else you cover in the book, Mark. You talk about atoning for the sins of your ancestors.
Well, you know, I've seen some strange cases. I saw a father commit a crime, and he was acquitted on a technicality once. I've seen this several times. He killed his business partner. Everybody knew he did, but he was acquitted. 30 years later, 40 years later, his son is framed for something he didn't do by a business partner, and he pays a price. Now, how do you link those things? I mean, we don't have any way to say that it's epigenetics. But the connections, what I'm more interested in is this idea of the repetitions. And science gives us the basis to say, look, it's right here. But I was doing this work even before the science, as the first gentleman talked about, because I'd been seeing these repetitions, like the woman that I mentioned who had this anxiety when she became a new mother, and what she finds out is her grandmother had started a house fire and killed accidentally her newborn, never even made the connection. That once she became pregnant, she had no anxiety before being a mother. But once she's a mother, she's consumed with the thought she'll do something to harm her baby. What makes these repetitions so alarming?
Another caller with Mark. And Mark, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I had a question. I'm 21. You know, I've been through a lot. I've been through foster care and everything. My mom had schizophrenia and she passed away. I wanted to know, because right now me and my fiance wouldn't have kids, but I have depression as well. You know, I don't have anybody left in my family. It's just me and my fiance. And I want to know, like, will my kids have schizophrenia, or will they develop it, or will I develop it later on down the line as well? Or this is a whole bunch of questions, you know, doctors can't really help me out with.
All right, Mark.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand your concern. What I find, if I can give you some tips, one of the ways we break the cycle is we talk about the traumas in our family. We work through them. We tell our kids so our kids have an idea of what happened, because our kids have no idea what they're feeling. They think they're the cause. We think we're the cause. We think something inside us is off or something inside us is broken. Secondly, number two, make peace with your parents, even if your parents struggled. What I found, if anything can immunize us from repeating the sufferings of the past, it's having a healing relationship with our parents. What we reject in our parents is likely to resurface in our lives. In the book, I teach how to do this, how to receive something good from our parents, even if very little was given, even if they were affected in some way, even if they had mental illness, even if they drank, even if they were critical, if we can find a way inside ourselves to have peace with them, it seems to immunize us to a great degree from repeating the past and from passing it forward. Also very important, make peace. Number three, make peace with your child's other parent. Children, like you, like me, like all of us, because of our great innocence, our great loyalty, and because we're hardwired, we can unconsciously carry what's unresolved between our parents or what's behind our parents. But if we make peace with our parents, if we make peace with our child's other parent, if we talk about these traumas, if we tell our kids, hey, this is what happened, it seems that the feeling that you're having is very similar to what grandma went through. The fourth thing, do these processes that I lay out in the book, they work. I've been doing them for over 20 years with people. They can be life changers. When we focus and repeat, we change new neural pathways. So you take a practice that's meaningful for you, one you find in the book, and you repeat the practice, you focus on it, you do it with your heart, you do it with your strength, and what you find is that through focus and repetition, this the neuroplasticity teachers, they tell you, this is how we make our brains change. We create new neural pathways.
Okay, I'm going to get another caller on the air, Dr. Benjamin Stevens. Dr. Stevens, you're on the air.
Yes, I had a question. This is all very interesting, but again, taking this back to the very basics, the very biological sciences at hand here, I mean, I simply have to question if there's any scientific basis at all to the assertion that you can actually have inherited things from external influences. I mean, if epigenetics is the change in organisms caused by modifications of gene expression rather than alterations in the genetic code itself,
right,
how exactly does it follow that, say, somebody who is an orphan, whose parents or grandparents were subject to the Holocaust or the Rwandan genocide, if that person was raised in an entirely different environment, you're telling me that this person would exhibit signs of that based on expressions of their genetic code that were encoded into their genes from external influences? I mean, alterations in the very basic DNA molecule itself?
DNA is not...
Those are claims that fall far, far, far outside of accepted scientific premise.
Right, so the DNA is not altered, but we do know that there is, you know, the epigenetics and how the DNA is expressed can be altered, and that markers can be put on place to do that. That's the research that I've seen, and Dr. Stevens, and this is something that is going to be continued to be explored and have a skeptical view. And I appreciate you calling in. I wish we could have had you on a little bit earlier to explore that further. And because we're out of time, and I want to thank our guest, Mark Woolen. He is the author of It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. This is The Source on KSTX.